Hello, Steve. Hello, Jill. It's time to game classy.
Long, long time ago, I can still remember when the music used to make me smile.
Hello,
and I knew if I had my chance that I could make those people dance and maybe they'd be happy for a
steal. For a while. For a while.
Made me shiver with every paper I delivered.
Bang. They tried to kill us.
We escaped from that gas and met Jar Jar,
and Boss Nass.
We took a bongo
to the sea
and up to Thebe to save the queen. And we all ended,
Tatooine.
That's where we met
the boy.
And we were singing, my, this Iranican guy. Maybe
there's later, but he's just a small fry.
He left his home and kissed his mommy goodbye, saying, soon I'm gonna be a Jedi.
Outside of shitposting memes, that is the best thing that came out of episode one.
It's absolutely. You're also really hot on the mic. If you could back up just a smooge.
One sec. Let's see if I can readjust this here.
Not that I mind. It's just, you know, I can already tell it's like, wow, Steve's loud on the mic today.
How about now?
So did you oversleep? Was that what was going on?
So the answer to that is yes, but also no. Like I've been awake for a while. But I was just sitting in bed, shit posting, and I didn't get your message. I was like, another Saturday where I fucking blew my morning and did nothing productive. And then I was like, wait a minute, I was supposed to do something this morning.
Oh, shit.
And then I checked my messenger and I was like, fuck. But for some reason, my messenger is really weird. Like, I don't know why. But like in the morning, so like I'll get my messages no problem, like all day, except in the morning it like doesn't work until I open it again.
Weird.
So like I didn't get that message until I checked my messenger at when I sent you that message is when I checked messenger. So like I didn't, like there were a couple other messages that I didn't get either, because like some reason it just like stops working overnight and then it won't work until I open it again. So if I forget to check it, I'll be like, huh, no one's messaged me. And I'll be like, fuck, there's like 20 messages that I didn't check.
Dude, it's your own fault. You got fucked by the Zuck.
You know what? It is. I was zucked. I was absolutely zucked. But you know what? Everyone's been zucked at this point, so it doesn't really matter, does it?
There's no accountability anymore with literally anything. People could just do what they want. We've stopped caring as a society.
Finally, we've truly all been zucked.
It's at the point right now where it used to be like you'd have one person out of like a million say something really dumb, and everyone goes, oh, that's really dumb. You've been ostracized from society until you can apologize and come back for it. And nowadays, there's so many people saying dumb things that we just don't care anymore. We've stopped.
I would say, I thought the dumb things are just becoming a collective now.
Well, it kind of is, but it's like, it's just the fact that you're allowed to say dumb things with no repercussions, so just more people say dumb things. There used to be repercussions to saying dumb things.
I see.
Yeah. I mean, like, we still have some limits. Like, you know, if you say Nazi stuff, you will still get punched most of the time.
Yeah, though I think the argument is not that there is absolutely no rules. Perhaps it's the
line has
the just band. Been, yeah, yeah. The band has been expanded quite far.
Yeah, well, I mean, and it's even still. I think it's only been expanded as far as it is, not because of acceptance, but because we're all just really fucking tired of it.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, if anything, like ignoring people is pretty dope if you have the option.
Yeah, but the
like,
problem is that those people have people that don't ignore them and agree with them.
True. Oh no. Well, I had to add the caveat of if you have the option. So you have to be very pick and choose about what you ignore. Like you can't just like flat ignore everything, but there are many things that you certainly can and probably should ignore. I bring them up a lot because it's the funniest thing, and B, I can't believe that it's actually real. But like the flat earthers, that's very safe to just completely ignore. Like you don't need to engage flat earthers. There's no like you just let them be. Like you can let them be insane. There's no I don't think you're going to suffer a lot of like negative repercussions for not engaging with flat earthers. Now, you know, genocidal maniacs, those people you probably can't ignore.
Yeah, probably. But the thing with flat earthers are, it's like, I think flat earthing is a gateway drug to many bad things, but I don't think it's like, all in all, it's like, flat earthers are kind of just like people who believe in hollow earth, or in some ways, you know, like crystal healing. It's like there's no, well, there's some bad things with crystal healing, but there's like no real bad like repercussions of flat earthing. The problem is that flat earthing and crystal healing and, you know, a hollow earth theory and, you know, Larusian conspiracy theories, it usually just all ends up into we can't trust vaccines and all the Jews are lizard people sent from outer space.
It's, you know, turtles, it's like, all the way down.
Yeah, well, one of my favorite podcasts does this has this theory, like they play this game of like how long will this take to tie back to the Jews, you know, like that's like what they're the thing, like every conspiracy theory, every like major bad thing that happens, it's like, let's see how long it takes the racist portion of this to get back to the Jews. And it's usually not that, you know, not that long of a wait, but anyway.
Yeah, generally.
Okay. Let's, I do have some stuff to talk about. We are on the cusp of the Halloween holiday, which is nice.
This is Halloween. This is Halloween. Pumpkin scream in the dead of night.
Which is I still think Christmas, A Nightmare Before Christmas is a Christmas movie. I don't think it's a very Halloween-y movie.
I think it exists solely in its own category of a dual holiday film.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that. I just feel like when I'm watching it, I'm like, I don't want to watch this in Halloween. I want to watch this at Christmas.
You know? I think if you wanted to go into the true power of watching The Nightmare Before Christmas to really make it hit perfectly is you start it on Halloween, you end after the you stop the film at the end of the Halloween celebration, and then you restart it on Christmas time.
Oh, I like that idea. That could work. Did you ever see that documentary about Henry Selick's canceled movie?
No, who's Henry Selick?
He's the director of Nightmare Before Christmas.
Ah.
He did. It was called The Shadow King. It was this movie. It was one of those. It was like Coraline and all that, done for Disney. Mm-hmm. They had already spent like $50 million on it, and like he had sets built and the puppets built, and they already kind of started pre-production. And then out of nowhere, it was canceled. Huh. And you could like, there's a documentary about it, and it's really, really good. It's a very good documentary, and you could see it, and you're like, oh, I can. It's like, the whole thing is like, there's this kid who's born with like extremely weird hands that are with long fingers, and he like makes shadow puppets that like come to life. It's
that sounds terrifying and awesome.
It's incredibly terrifying. Like, and I could see why Disney may have panicked on it. But my feeling is that when you have that like $50 million that you lost on it, right? Let's say it probably takes like another 50 to finish the project, and then you have to spend another $50 million on promotion. Like, that's kind of how it goes. You usually spend 50% of the film's budget on promotion after, you know, like you upscale to 50%. So sure. Like, so that's $150 million right there. Okay. It might not make $150 million at the box office, but we all know that movies like that, it's not about the box office. It's about like the lasting draw. And it's a Henry Selick movie, and his movies are generally, you know, become cult favorites, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Coraline, Nightmare Before Christmas, James and the Giant Peach. What was the other one he did? Didn't he do all those Laika ones?
I don't know.
He might have.
Did he do Kubo? Did he do Kubo with the two strings?
You know, I I'm not 100% sure on it. Let me just, I could check Rick real quick. Oh, so he did, yeah, he did Nightmare Before Christmas, James the Giant Peach. He directed Monkey Bone. Let's, you know, he did have a
I love Monkey Bone.
He did Coraline, and he has not done Kubo. His next movie that he's doing is called Wendell and the Wild. It's a Netflix project. Yeah. Right. It's about two scheming demon brothers, Wendell and Wild, must face their arch nemesis, the demon dusting nun, Sister Helly, and her two acolytes, the goth teens Kat and Raoul. Oh man, I can't wait. I hope the nun is sexy in that movie.
Hell yeah.
It's a sexy demon fighting nun.
Hell yeah.
Remember when the 90s there was like that whole like subgenre of like sexy nuns that would like sexy battle nuns?
I do remember that. I think that wasn't there an actual comic called Battle Nun?
I believe there was, but I think that actually grew out of the movement. Like there was like this whole like subgenre of battle nuns. You know, like sexy dominatrix nuns, which I'm, as I said, I'm all about. I'm perfectly cool with that. there's a very famous art piece, and I don't know where it's held right now because that's escaping me. But it's a picture of a nun praying, and like, you see this like creepy like priest behind her, and then there's another painting that's like the backside, and you see that she's got like the skirts raised, and you see her bare ass, and it's like being spanked. And nice. Like, this isn't like a newer painting. This was done in like the Renaissance.
So, oh yeah, okay. There's that super super old Renaissance painting of the like thick with two C's nun getting piped from behind by the preacher. That was awesome.
Yeah, but you know it's
that's like a super old like classical art piece. Like it like legit is like an actual like. Yeah, this is like a, you know, like a Rembrandt kind of thing. And well, it's like, that's fucking dope.
Yeah, that's what art back then was. It was like rich people who could afford to have, you know, their pornography done by a professional, right? Yeah, like, you know,
it's controlled by conspicuously wealthy furries.
Yes, exactly. It's, you know, it's like in the future,
that's,
you know,
that's 200... one of my absolute favorite art memes. Have you ever seen that one?
Well, no, like rich furries.
It's great. It has like the throughout history, the art world has always been controlled by like a small minority, and it has like years. It has like you know like nobility, independently wealthy, aristocrats, blah blah blah, and then like at the very end, it's got a dude in a fursuit with a bunch of money. It just has a conspicuously wealthy furries.
Yeah, I mean
that's pretty great.
But it's true though. It's like you think 300 years from now. People will be looking back on DeviantArt and saying like, this was legitimate art. And it's like, you know, a Judy Hopps wearing a nun outfit, a battle nun outfit. And you're just like, you know,
I mean, I'm turned on just from the description.
I know. By the way, the painting is called The Nun's Backside. It was done by Dutch Swedish painter, Martin van Meitens the Younger in 1731. So it wasn't quite the Renaissance, but it was, early enlightenment.
Yeah, there's a good amount of nun pornography out there. Yeah. High end nun pornography.
Well, that's like, what I'm saying. I should say old. These rich guys, they wanted pornography. I mean, granted, they could afford prostitutes and whatever else had you, but you know what? They probably had a room in their manse that just had like their naughty pictures that they had painted for them, and they could afford it, and that's what it was. So it's like, you know, the poor plebs, there was like the artist would draw like sketch images of like a nun like flashing them, and they'd be like, all for Silas. And you know, the uber rich would have these wonderful Vermeer paintings of nudes, and everyone nowadays is like, oh, look at this, it captures this beautifully, and it was all just for a dude to like rub one out. Like it's a wonderful thing to think about.
I like it. In his manse. I'm also going to now refer to my home as a manse as well.
You should. You're more than welcome to.
It's a manse.
So I actually do have one gaming thing that I wanted to talk about today.
I'm ready.
It's not even that crazy. Hold on a second. I got to sneeze.
And gaming.
Kissing tight. Thank you. Sorry about that. I'm not taking that out of this podcast, by the way.
That's fine.
So the new season of Underworlds was released. Mm-hmm. I think it's, what is it called? Hollowdeep. something like that.
I have no idea.
I should probably bring this up, so make sure I am speaking correctly on this. But the new season got released. It is Harrow Deep. And the box set is like $25 more than the previous seasons. So it went up from like, I think the original box set was like $50. And then I think the last two were like $60 each. And this new one is like $95. And it's, you're not getting anything really more in the box set. So a lot of people are kind of upset about this. It's $95 for sale. There's the part of me that agrees with you on everything where it's like, you know what, people are going to pay for it regardless. But I was like, even the $40 box set was not worth $40. It's nice enough, but you know, if you want to play, you got to buy it, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's like, if you think it's too expensive and you think it's outrageous, don't buy it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you want to how to solve that problem? If you think something is too expensive and it's outrageously costed, don't pay for it.
Exactly. And the but on the other side, I'm kind of like, man, that's a really shitty move on Games Workshop's part, like to jack up the price that much.
Well, I think that's a very good indicator of how well that game is selling.
Do you think it's selling well or not selling at all?
Other way around. I think they raised the price because they're going on like, well, the average person was buying this much, so we need to up the price to this, like, because I just project, my guess is they're doing it on projected sales. Also, it could be easily be that's the thing too, because like right now it's really hard to like shot call reasoning for price increases, because there is absolutely like absurd materials gouging going on right now. Yeah. So like they could very well be off, like because obviously they're obviously not going to disclose their costs. I don't know their costs. I could only speculate to their costs. So I'm not going to say this is true, but they could easily be like, yeah, this is actually a really competitive price because of this, this, and this, but they're obviously not going to disclose their profit margins or anything like that. But it could be the card printer is super expensive that they have to use now because they can't use the one that they used for, what was the fucking Curse City? Yeah. They can't use that printer anymore. So they had to switch printers, and the other printer's more expensive, but still less expensive than what the other printer was going to be. So now they've raised the cost of the game. I'm not saying that this is the case. It could easily just be them like crunching numbers and going like, we're going to sell 100. This is what we want to make on it. This is the price we need to set. If we sell 100, if we sell more than 100, yay.
Yay.
Yeah. So
I agree.
That's my guess.
Yeah. That's the other part I was thinking about, is the fact that Brexit pretty much fucked Games Workshop with a lot of this.
On top of the Rona gouging, like you got a twofer now.
Yeah, you got Rona gouging and Brexit gouging, which you know, the funny thing is that, of course, my favorite part of whenever something like this happens is the Games Workshop fan response, right? So of course you have these guys who I would say look more like us, you know, they're, you know, late 30s dudes, you know, with facial hair, sometimes not done well, you know, sometimes with bald spots, standing around in front of a screen talking about how this is the end of Warhammer Underworlds. And you know that it's going to be a good video because it ends, it's a question, the title is a question, is this the end of Underworlds? And you're just like, I'm just always going to go back to Betteridge's law of headlines, which if it ends in a question mark, the answer is always going to be no.
Yeah, it's correct.
Is this the end of Underworld? No, no, it's not.
No.
You see that a lot with 3D printing. These guys are always just like, is this the end of 3D printing? And you're like, no, no, it's not. It's like, calm your tits. Calm down.
No, buddy, it's not.
Yeah. And it's like, and you see all these people and like they just do it for the clicks. It's like you see these, and then they do it for clicks because they want people to be like, like the really dumb people are like, what if this is the end of Underworlds? Oh my God, this guy might have the insight into what I'm thinking.
they've got to know.
They've got to know. And then there's the smart people who I shouldn't say the smart people. Then there's the middle people. I would say like the middle intelligence people who are not quite dumb enough to be like, oh, this guy might have an idea, or they're not quite smart enough to know that the answer is no. But they're the ones who want to fight it and like, this isn't, we still got games that are being played in our local store. You know, it's like, this is not the end of the of Warhammer Underworlds. You know, it's that middle group, that middle third that's just like not quite dumb enough to buy in and not quite smart enough to just ignore it.
Right, I get you. Well, I mean, that's the classic headline there. There's a great Sung Won bit where he's like Hugh Jackman cast to play character in new X-Men film, and then like the guy's like, well, I don't know, make it a little peppier, say actor cast in X-Men film, and he's like, really, are you sure? And he's like, actually no, even better, just say actor ? And he's like, this is the stupidest fucking thing. And he's like, just post it. And he posted it and he's like, we got 3 million hits.
Yeah, exactly. Actor?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, it's getting to the point where it's just, it like every headline from like a YouTube video series, like one of those vlogs or whatever, should just literally be like, is Games Workshop over? Like that should just be every one of them, because that's what literally every one of these videos is. It's just like, is Games Workshop over? ?
You can just do is Games Workshop with a ton of question marks, and then like have your face with like the distorted eyes and like the extra big mouth, like whoa.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you just start off with
No. That's retro now. That's like
the air horns are retro now?
Yeah, that's retro. That's like That is out of date, my friend.
Oh well, whatever. I'll get back to just my normal sexy Mars Attacks shit posting. So
Mars Attacks. I'm all in on this Judy Hopps nun battle sexy battle outfit.
I'm gonna see if I could find something and send it to you, because I'm assuming it does exist. I will never.
It's pretty unlikely that it doesn't exist. I mean. It might not, but that sounds like something like that specifically sounds like something that would exist.
The Judy Hopps and just Zootopia in general has kept the furry fandom going. We'll keep the furry fandom going for at least another 30 years. Like they have 30 years worth of just material from that movie alone. So are you looking up Judy Hopps battle armor right now?
I am.
that's what's going on. No one knows anything about Harrow Deep, like how does it play or anything like that, because you know I haven't seen any honest reviews of anything. All I've seen is just people upset about the pricing. So we have that going for us at least.
All right. So in an effort for science.
For science, I
Googled Judy Hopps nun.
Yeah.
And hang on. All right. So the first result for Judy Hopps nun is a scene that looks like it's inspired by the film The Nun.
Ooh.
That has Judy Hopps in a nun outfit holding a lantern, and a creepy nun with no face is behind her. So there you go. That is the first. Now, I then decided to go further again for science, and I added Rule 34.
Ooh.
After the Judy Hopps nun, and let me tell you, the first result: Judy Hopps nun outfit, butthole, bam. Right there.
See, well, yeah, you know, I do not doubt it. As I've said, the movie Zootopia will keep the furry fandom going for the next 30 years. And it's going to create a whole new group of people who get really confused. I shouldn't say confused, whose sexual awakening is watching Zootopia. And it's going to lead to a whole new level of things. So I could, you know, consider me like the hairy,
it's the tradition passed down from Robin Hood in the 70s.
Yes. And Bugs Bunny wearing women's outfits.
Also true.
Robinhood, I think, was 65, if I'm not mistaken. God damn,
movie's old as fuck.
Yeah.
I thought it was the 70s because I know they're wasn't the junk? I thought the Jungle Book was the 60s and Robin Hood was the 70s because they reused a bunch of the
Robin Hood is 73.
Yeah, because they reused a bunch of the Jungle Book animations for Robin Hood.
Yes, they did.
That's why I thought the dates were swapped around.
Yeah, let me see.
I mean, I'm the fucking Disney historian. Let me tell you.
You are. And Jungle Book was 67. So
let me tell you, I'm no Disney historian. I just I like cartoons sometimes, you know. Hey, I like the way they draw the fox ladies with the big titties. Gabagool. I am Gabagool.
I am Gabagool. I am Gabagool. Fucking love it. Did you watch them?
I know so good.
Yeah, I know you don't watch. You haven't watched many Western films lately, but did you watch The Many Saints in Newark?
No, is that a thing?
Yeah, it's on.
Is that what I Am Gabagool is from?
No. The Many Saints that's not real, by the way.
I know that scene. I Am Gabagool isn't real, but like something happened that created that meme. Because that's not the only variant of that meme. There's a bunch of memes that are like, you smell like blank, and then the person saying, I am blank.
Well, it's from The Sopranos. I mean, that scene is from The Sopranos.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Got it.
Yeah.
So The Sopranos is the origin source. I thought there was a different origin source, and The Sopranos was just used in that one meme.
No,
being the origin source makes sense because there's a lot of people like riffing off of that that meme.
Well, and of course, The Sopranos has one of my favorite scenes, and it's actually, I believe, in the pilot. I'm not 100% sure, but it's at least in the first three episodes where they're all at like a family gathering, and Meadow Soprano, the daughter, comes in with a plate of gabagool, and I don't remember who. I want to say it was Stevie Ray Vaughan's character. It goes, "Hey, that gabagool over here." That's one of my favorite fucking things ever. The Many Saints. Do you ever watch Sopranos?
I watched Sopranos while it was on air, like brand new.
Yeah.
I got to the episode. It was like the end of the season, I think, where there was like a Russian assassin and they were getting chased through the woods in like winter.
That's like mid third season, I want to say.
That was the last episode I watched.
That was a great episode. That's the Pine Barrens episode.
It was really fucking good. Like, I mean, like the Sopranos was one of those shows that like I didn't stop watching for any particular reason other than like, oh, it's done, and I just never like started watching it again.
Yeah, it's a very hard show to binge nowadays. It's not a very bingeable show. It's a very good show, but it's not one of those shows that you could just like watch straight through.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely I did that over COVID. We watched all the Sopranos episodes and I was just like, man, this show is really fucking rough. But The Many Saints of Newark is the new movie that just came out. That's kind of like a prequel to The Sopranos.
Mm.
It was pretty good, but like most mom movies do best when they're when you get like the non-mob stuff, like when it's just them hanging out and doing like goofy shit, like that's like the best part of Goodfellas, right? When they're just kind of hanging out and like that's the best part of The Many Saints in Newark is it's very similar. It's like when it's just like a bunch of guys hanging out, you know, talking shit and doing all that sort of thing. That's the fun. That's like what you want to watch. And then
gabagool over here.
Gabagool over here. And then when you get to like the non-mobs, when you get to the actual like criminal stuff, you're just like, this isn't interesting at all. It's just bad people doing bad things, which is great to remind you that these are bad people. But at the same time, you're like, it's not as good, you know?
Yeah.
Like, because that was like, that's always the thing about like The Godfather or The Sopranos is that they were average family. They were just normal guys. They would just do bad things. And that's what I think makes it interesting.
Their job was cool as hell, and it was being a criminal.
Yeah, and you know they would, and they're not even really good criminals. Like that's the other thing on top of it is like no mobster's really a good criminal.
Look, I'm gonna lay it out there. How many people do you know in your life that you've ever encountered, ever experienced, or even know of How many people do you know who are really, 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 really good at their job? How many people do you know? What's the average? Like, just give me a percentage, like a ballpark. How many?
Okay. If you want to go percentage, it's very, very low.
Okay. So let's say, I mean, what do you say? Like 20%, 20% people good at the job.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So 20% of people are good at their job. So fucking mobsters, 20% of mobsters are gonna be good at their job. So most of them are not going to be good at being criminals because it's their job. Nobody's good at their job.
But I think the thing is that I think it's just that the whole thing is that criminals only are criminals if they get caught. Right.
This is true. So the best criminals, you never know if they're criminals.
And exactly. And not only that, but you also have on top of that, you only have like how many percentage of cops actually do their job.
Yeah, but Joe, don't you understand? I never would have gotten caught if it wasn't for that fucking stoolie.
It's true. Squealing Joe sold him out again? Who would have thought?
Squealing Joe, talk to the cops again? Squealing Joe? Ah, Squealing Joe?
Our Squealing Joe. It's like on the Simpsons episode where with Homie the Clown, where he's he's pretending to be Krusty, and they're like, so Fat Tony kidnaps him thinking he's Krusty, and he's like, I'm not Krusty the Clown, I'm Homer Simpson. He's like the same Homer Simpson who drove his car into our local lounge. He goes, no, my name's Barney Gumble. He's like, the same Barney Gumble that blah blah blah. He's like, no, my name is actually, and he's like, think fast, Homer. And he goes, Joe Falacci. He's like, the same Joe Falacci who sold out the mafia to the American crime. And I was just like, I just fucking love it. That was excellent. That he goes to Joe Falacci of all people.
Man, that was peak Simpsons writing right there.
And was. We've been doing our Simpsons marathon for the Treehouse of Horror. And right now we're in 2010, 2011 era.
How rough is it?
It is fucking rough. I cannot condone watching Simpsons from that era. It's so bad. It's like so fucking bad. They did one of the segments was based on The Diving Bell and the Butterfly, a movie that people don't even know about, let alone didn't even see. Like there's like a difference.
I'm not gonna front whatever you just said.
Yeah.
I would say, what the fuck did you just say to me?
Exactly. Like it's one of those movies that, like, people, it's not even like you knew that that was a movie and you didn't go see it. Like, there are movies like that, that, like, you know about, but you're like, I'm not going to go see that movie.
Yeah, correct. I've never heard of that movie you just said.
Diving Bell and the Butterfly didn't even make any sort of cultural impact, and yet they did a whole segment on it, and they did it poorly on top of that.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I don't know what to say on that one, but yeah, I do not recommend that. Oh, speaking of Halloween.
This is Halloween.
I remember last time we talked, I talked about having my Southern lawyer character for my cleric.
Yes.
I actually scrapped that and I came up with a new character I'm actually playing today with this character. So it would have been yesterday for this podcast comes out.
All right, I'm ready.
He is an elf alchemist. And he is, he's basically Herbert West, the reanimator. I just won't bury the byline and bury the lead line on that one. I am running Herbert West, reanimator, as an elf alchemist. He starts off.
Who's going to believe a talking head? Go get a job at a side show.
Basically, since I'm starting off level, I think it's six. I get to start off a little bit more jacked. So that's what makes this more fun. Is that I do have a flesh golem, familiar, who without a head, of course, who will be total melee. He's a tank. He's just designed to take impact hits.
Please and tell me you named him Agnew.
I should name him Agnew.
Headless body of Agnew.
God, I should make a character around Richard Nixon. That would be pretty funny.
Definitely name the. I mean, for whatever else is happening, please call your flesh golem Agnew.
No, I'm not calling my flesh golem Agnew.
Come on, it's right there.
No, he's Carl. I'm named him after Dr. Carl Hill from Reanimator.
All right.
Yes. Yeah. No, wait. I'm sorry. The body is Dean Halsey. That's who he is. The body's Dean Halsey. Mm-hmm. And I carry around a head that I talk to who is Dr. Carl Hill.
I see.
Yes. No, I have some other name for him. I think I just call him Dr. Hill. There's Dr. Hill, and then there's the Dean, who is the homunculus.
Crusty old Dean.
Yes. And the whole thing is that because I wanted to do something that kind of challenged me as a player. I've never actually played a healer before. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to do like the typical cleric healer. I wanted to do something a little bit different. So if I do like a chaotic evil healer, I think that would be pretty fantastic. Like my whole goal is, and I know no one in my playgroup listens to this podcast, so I could say this, is I'm going to be creating potions that are healing potions, but not quite healing potions. Like they always do like some sort of negative side effect. So that they might not be aware of that I'm doing it, but I will, me and the DM will have this thing going on behind it, because my end game is that my character hates magic, right? But yet uses magic. Like his whole thing is that I want to extend life. I want to have eternal life that's non-magic based. Like he believes in science, not magic.
Mm-hmm.
He still does magic because that's kind of like how the way things are done. Yeah, any idiot can do unlife, but only a real genius can bring true life to the dead, you know, sort of thing.
I like it.
That's this whole thing. I want to have megalomaniacal monologues. I want to be, standing in the back healing while my homunculus tanks the bad guy. And whatever damage the homunculus takes, I could just take parts of the enemies and sew them back on. So like, oh, this like guy, he tore off the Dean's arm. Okay, we'll just take off his arm and put it back on. So kind of a ship of Theseus with a flesh homunculus.
I'm a fan. I like where you're going with this.
Yes. I just also like the idea of it being of just playing a true chaotic evil character. As opposed to like, I'm the guy who always takes the good path in video games. I never really
think you'd be chaotic evil. I think you'd probably be neutral evil. Chaotic evil. So chaotic evil is weird. Like, so cause most villains, most villains are either lawful evil or neutral evil. Chaotic evil is really rare. And like, the thing is, like, in D&D, they do a really shit job of explaining what chaotic evil is supposed to be, where, like, they're like, oh, it's just chaotic evil. That just means the most evil. But, like, chaotic evil is, like, crazy evil. Like, you have no self-control and no morals and no code. So, like, chaotic evil characters are, like, insanely, they're actually very uncommon. Like,
yes.
Like, Carnage. Carnage is a chaotic evil character from fucking Spider-Man.
Yes.
Carnage does nothing but just fucking randomly kill people. He doesn't really even have goals. He's just a fucking maniac who just kills people. That's chaotic evil. Like, that's really rare, I think. Cause like Thanos, he eradicated half the fucking universe, like, with a snap. Still not chaotic evil.
No, like, he's not chaotic evil. No, I would like, but I think what you did hit on something there when you're talking about West, I know, with a character not having a code, he kills indiscriminately. Does Herbert West have a code?
Is it Herbert West? Absolutely. Yeah. Herbert West is like, I would say Herbert West is a lawful evil character. I would absolutely say Dr. Herbert West is a lawful evil character.
So you think
he clearly has like. Like, so like his code is fucked up, but it's a code. Like,
no, I see, but I would go more neutral evil than lawful evil, because I always see lawful evil is like,
actually he is really selfish. So I would say neutral evil would probably make more sense. Evil, no, you're right. Neutral,
well, lawful evil is kind of like Grand Moff Tarkin or like a Nazi officer. You know, it's like they follow the law, even though they know that the law is bad, or they follow the law because they know the law is bad and they enjoy it. But it's like the Jew hunter from Inglourious Basterds, total lawful evil.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So no, I think Herbert West would be more of a neutral evil character, especially because he is super self-obsessed with like his own advancement and him getting all of the Like he want, like he's not just doing it for like the betterment of, like he's not doing the reagent for like the betterment of mankind. He's doing the reagent so he could get the fucking Nobel Prize. Like that's the whole point. Like he wants the glory. Yeah. So and because he's willing to do anything to meet that breaks him from the normal neutral category of most people into evil.
Yeah. Yeah, he's definitely, I wouldn't say that he's even chaotic neutral. I would say
No. I'm saying that like the thing that like any sort of neutrality, like because normally neutral is, you like the basis for most people, like almost every single person that's existed starts somewhere along the line of neutral. Because neutral is like you're out for your interests. Like yes. That's the base level. And then like sometimes you can slide between. And that's the other thing too. One of the reasons I don't really like using alignment very much, or at least being like a super stickler about alignment, is that like people aren't that simple. And also people like slide in and out of alignments. Like, like if someone has like a really, like, I mean, yes, there can be extremely, extremely wild, bad days for a person.
I have this little chart here that I was looking at online while we were talking, and one of the things that I really like that it says is that neutral evil says put self ahead of everything. Chaotic evil, it just says does whatever. And I think that's why
I'd say he's neutral evil, because he's definitely more about like I'm gonna fucking use this reagent. If people get helped by it, that's cool, but what I want is I want the fucking science accolades. I want the articles.
And so like chaotic neutral, he says, does whatever it takes. And I think that he could, like, Herbert West is kind of there, but I think Herbert West is also incredibly selfish.
Yes.
Like, so it's like, I think that's what he puts him into neutral evil as opposed to chaotic neutral, is that he's incredibly selfish.
Yes.
Yeah. And so it's part of the interesting thing is to play an incredibly selfish healer. Like that's interesting to me. Like how would you play that in a game of D&D? How do you play an incredibly selfish healer? Like when a person's like begging for potions and you're like, do you know what I have to do to get the parts for this potion? Do you know what it's like to pull the eyelashes off of a frog? Do you know what that entails me to do every time I have to do that for you?
Yes.
I think that sounds like an interesting character to play.
It makes sense. Like you do the job of you do the job you expect to be paid for it.
Yeah, exactly. I'm doing that job, Dan. Dan will never find fresher bodies.
That's right.
Yes. So that'll be the character that I'm playing today. I have all of my stuff. My only problem is that unfortunately, all of the stuff for Alchemist is inside, what's that fucking book? The Cauldron of Everything. And it's a one D&D book I don't have. So I have to like glean it all from like D&D sites that have actually, there's a ton of good information. Like you could get all the stuff and basically how to play this character online. It's just, it's fucking, I got to pull from a bunch of sources and everything else. It'd be nicer if I just had it in a book, but whatever. I don't care. It doesn't matter. All I'm going to be doing is making quips and monologuing and giving out potions. So
I like it.
Yeah. Did you watch the new Halloween? I don't know if you watched that yet. Halloween 2.
No, I've heard people say it's pretty good though.
Yeah. I've heard it's very brutal. It's brutal to watch.
I mean, that sounds good. I mean, Michael Myers should be a brutal, brutal character. So
yeah, I don't know. I think he kind of got flanderized into like an incredible, like a super tank character. Because I don't.
Oh, he's absolutely been powered up, but like, yeah. But that's the thing. Jason Voorhees also didn't start as a supernatural entity. He became a supernatural entity. Yeah. The only slasher villain that there's two actually. There's two slasher villains that did not get a supernatural power up at one point randomly. Which is Chucky and Freddy. They've always been supernatural.
Yes.
But like Jason was just a person. He was very strong. He was, he was tough. He was strong, but he was still a human being. Like he was not, a monster, and then he became a super monster. Like, and same thing with Michael Myers. I think that's the same thing, because like there's a clip I saw of Michael Myers walking out of a burning building that's completely on fire, and the firemen turn a fire hose on him, and he just walks straight through the fire hose and just stabs the fireman. Like, that's superhuman. Like, you can't, like, a human being can't do that. So Michael Myers has definitely escalated to, like, he's no longer human. Like, that's the whatever. I'm not going to try and like discuss or debate his fucking power level or anything, but I can say that he is above the human limit.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree with that.
So like, he might not be like throwing cars around like Jason Voorhees does, but he's definitely above the human limit.
Yeah, that's why I always like when people say like it's Freddy versus Jason. No, it should be Michael Myers versus Jason, because I think that's more equal match, in all honesty.
They would be a closer fight for sure. Like, especially if you go by if you just take reboot Jason and reboot Michael Myers, 100%, that's the fight for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think Freddy should fight Pinhead.
Yeah, Freddy versus Pinhead makes a lot more sense. It would be, you know, actually, that would be pretty good. Like, I think about it, like, you could do all four, like, in the same movie. Like, we'd have to figure out a way to weave the plot line. So, like, you do it almost like a bracket system.
Mm-hmm.
So, you'd have, it would start off with, you know, Jason versus Michael Myers. And, mm-hmm. you know, they, like, let's say that there is, okay, here we go. There is... I can't figure out, like, there would be a good tie-in somewhere, but they have to have the box, lament configuration. They'd have to have the lament configuration.
Yes.
At like a summer camp, and it'd have to be.
I love it already.
Yeah, and it would have to be like one of the kids was the child of a victim of Michael Myers, who moved to Elm Street and now is going to summer camp, you know, like, and brought Freddy yep. with her, right?
Yes.
So something like that, right? And now, like, they have the lament configuration they find the lament configuration under the floorboards of the summer camp home, right? So you have Michael Myers and Jason both competing in the real world to kill this girl, right? So they're fighting against each other there, right? And then you, in the dream world, you have Pinhead, who wants to take her soul and torture her. And you have Freddy, who wants to kill her in her dreams. So Freddy won't let Pinhead take her soul, because that would mean Freddy can't kill her. So, and Pinhead doesn't want Freddy to kill her, because if Freddy kills her, he can't take her soul. So they would have to fight on that end. And so whoever wins that would have to fight whoever, you know, is able to, and whoever wins versus Jason versus Michael Myers fight. So that would be the movie. So it would have to be like a bracket right there on how it would work. And the nice thing is that you could technically, you know, create like four different movies out of that. You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. But it was actually,
I mean, I'm not gonna lie, I like it.
Yeah.
I like it. I think that's I think you got some going on there.
We were because I know you and I were talking about remakes from the 80s remakes of 60s movies. Like, what is, like, how in the world did the 80s get so many good remakes out of 60s movies?
Mm-hmm. They, like, really did.
And like, nowadays you watch a remake of a horror movie or a sci-fi movie and you're like, this is terrible, but yet for some odd reason in the 1980s they were able to do it over and over and over again, and you're like, god damn it, how are these movies so good?
They really did,
because we talked about The Thing, which is I think the pinnacle of all of that. The 78 Invasion of the Body Snatchers, which has kind of started it all off. That movie's fantastic. There's The Blob. There was one more that we were talking about, and why can't I think of it right now? God damn it.
Invasion of the Body Snatchers, The Blob, The Thing, and...
Shit. We had one that we were talking about.
We did. We came up with another one. Fuck. I don't remember.
But I mean, like, and also on top of it, you have... The the Living Dead series, which was mostly 80s. Like,
well, that's what I said. Yeah, there was the banger. There was the banger remake of Night of the Living Dead as well.
Yes, there was the 89, but there was also the Living Dead movies as in and of themselves. So Return of the Living Dead 1, Return of the Living Dead 2, and Return of the Living Dead 3. 3 was 90s, but I think Return of the Living Dead 1 and 2 were both 1980s, and those were really fun movies.
Mm-hmm.
Living Dead 1 goes on a skoosh too long, but that's my complaint about literally everything. So
yeah, most movies are just a little bit too long. I find it very rare and very, very refreshing when I finish a film and I'm like, man, that movie was just a little too short. That's like the rarest. That's fucking diamonds to me. That's like, I can't believe I said that.
Well, I mean, I've said it before. I think I said it on this podcast before in that. Oh, The Fly. That's the other one.
Yes. Bundlefly. Fucking Cronenberg. Yo,
Cronenberg. But that's what I always say. I say every movie gets 90 minutes from me. If you have a movie, you get 90 minute watch from me, whether it's good or bad. I'll watch a 90 minute movie. Every minute over that 90 minutes has to be earned for it to be a good movie. Like, because so many movies drag out shit past that 90 minutes when they don't need to be. If the movie's a tight 90 minutes, you don't have to worry about it. But yes, the Fly was the other one I was thinking of. And especially, man, I tried watching Videodrome the other day. I couldn't fucking do it.
That movie's rough and really weird, but I do like it.
Yeah, I mean, I like it too in many ways, but it's rough. It's hard to get through. I mean, and fuck James Woods, god damn it, why did he have to become such a shithead? Like,
I told you, he got broke by his encounter on the plane.
And yes, you're right.
I'm telling you that's literally what broke the dude. Like, it, like, there's no question to me that that's actually what happened.
Oh man,
because nobody has that big of a shift. Nobody has that big of a shift without like an event, some sort of catalyst.
Okay, here's another one. Here's another good remake I was looking at. Cat People, the Klaus Kinski movie.
Oh yes,
that one was 90, and that one was 82. So it's early in there, but it's not Klaus Kinski. Natasha Kinski is the cat lady in there. Really great underrated transformation scene.
Yes, it was very erotic.
Yes, it was very erotic. No, I mean, but it came out like right after American Werewolf in London, so like, people were obviously make that comparison. But the
Werewolf in London transformation was not very erotic though.
Well, that says for you,
I guess. I mean, I'm not too into the pain thing. So
some of us, find that very erotic.
That's fair.
Yeah. That was another one that I had come up with on that one. But there was like, I just don't understand. I think, you know what I think it is? I think it's the 1980s. They were coming up with their own beats to these classic movies. Mm-hmm. And they're like, these classic movies have a great idea, but they're just executed very poorly. So we have this kind of low budget technology and that Joe Dante / John Carpenter mindset that even though we do, like, since we don't have a lot of money, we have to make it so it looks good with low money. Mm-hmm. Whether it's the camera angles, the lighting, whatever it is, we have to make this look good with shitty, with the shitty budget that we have. So that's why they're able to do more with less and make it cool with its own beats. And in the 90s and 2000s, a lot of these movies would get remade with big budgets and they would just hit the same beats, not make it scary at all because they have the money so they could show the shit. And that's why they're terrible. Like American Werewolf in Paris. What are you looking up?
I was looking up to see if there were any other movies that fit the criteria.
I don't, you know, there probably are, but I just, those are the ones that I can think of off the top of my head.
Yeah, I wanted to, because I really feel like there's another one, and I'm trying to figure it out, but I can't.
The 1990s Village of the Damned with Christopher Reeve.
Oh, that one is pretty good, actually.
I'm looking as well. Leprechaun.
I mean, I do love Leprechaun. He took me gold.
you know, the thing movie I should watch this Halloween, and some movie I haven't watched in a long time is Van Helsing. I think we're far enough away from Van Helsing that I might be able to enjoy it a little bit more.
You know what? I'm absolutely not gonna lie. I liked that movie. I really didn't get what people were so mad about like when they shit all over that movie. I legit did not understand it. It was like, maybe I think I just don't know what people were expecting. Cause like I went in to see that movie to watch an extremely stupid movie about Hugh Jackman shooting fucking Draculas and werewolves. And it is a stupid fucking movie of Hugh Jackman shooting Draculas and werewolves. But like, I didn't think it was done bad. Like it's weird. Like that action movies to me are like the weirdest thing when people pan action movies. Cause I'm just like, you people like Iron Man. Yeah. Like, I don't get it.
I think like there was a certain charm in The Mummy, like the movie that was Stephen Sommers' movie, right? That he did right before that, Mummy 1 and 2. There was a charm to them, like, and it wasn't that it was like super actiony, because those movies aren't super actiony. There's action sequences in them, but it's not like they're like, you
no,
never saw
they're,
Brendan.
They're very much a really good homage to like the 20s and 30s monster films. Just they have a more modern Hollywood bombastic.
Yeah, they have action set pieces to them, but it's not quite like Van Helsing, like Brendan Fraser doesn't turn into a mummy to fight the mummy type.
Right.
Thing.
Yes. Van Helsing is absolutely ridiculous. That film is fucking nonsense. It's like, so like if the argument is that the movie is complete nonsense and very silly, okay, sure, gotcha. Yeah. But like, what were you expecting? Like, the trailer shows him firing an automatic crossbow. Like,
yes,
it's not like the movie was billed as this serious noir. Like,
as I said, I watched it and I was like, you know, I think my feeling before was like, this is going to be terrible. I'm going to watch this, but I'm not going to like it. I think like I knew going in it was going to be bad, but I was like, when the carriage exploded, I think that might have been just a tad too much. Like the carriage went over a cliff and exploded.
Yes. Yeah, it's completely ridiculous film. Do not misinterpret me of me saying that like it's a fucking kind of cinematic masterpiece. The film is absolute nonsense. But you know what? I kind of like I have like a really low tolerance for people who are just like, oh, it's like, look, movies are allowed to be dumb popcorn movies. Like that's a thing. It's kind of the same thing. It's the other side of the coin where I was talking to you about how like where the 80s just dropped banger movie after banger movie. Now every movie is so safe. So because every movie is so safe, everyone is either like, it's shit if it's not a safe movie, or it's an auteur piece if it's not a safe movie. Like that's so we've hit this weird like I don't know if paradigm is the right word, but we've hit this weird, like this very strange equilibrium in films right now. And it's because of budgets. No question. It's because of budgets. Like the money that's being thrown in movies right now is like, just for the sake of argument, obviously it didn't, but for the sake of argument, if the Avengers failed, that would have been the largest financial disaster in Hollywood history by like,
yeah. You mean if Endgame failed?
If Endgame failed, yeah. If Endgame came out and like nobody went to see it, that would have been the biggest financial disaster in the history of Hollywood. Like,
yeah, but they
not even a question.
They were able to do that though because they knew it was safe, because they knew like people will pay money to see this fucking movie.
Yes, absolutely. I say that might not be the best example, but to give an idea of like, you know, the budgets at stake before, like if The Thing, John Carpenter's The Thing, actually John Carpenter's Thing, I think it only did okay in theaters.
Yeah, it did not
The Fly did well in theaters, for sure. So like The Fly, whatever amount of money they risked on that film, if that movie flopped, they were like, okay, we're okay with risking this amount. And I think that's the big difference for a lot of the movies right now, is they're not okay with risking the amount. They're like, this film's budget is going to be $80 million or whatever, $800 million. We expect a $1.6 billion return. Like, that's what it is. Well, so I think because of that, it created this like line where now people are like, if the movie is not at the, I'll just say the Marvel line, if it's under the Marvel line, like Van Helsing, then it's a stupid movie. No, it's not good because it's stupid. Or if it's over the Marvel line, like, The Lighthouse. Suddenly it's a thrilling auteur piece, although I really do like The Lighthouse. But
yeah,
you were fond of me lobster, weren't you?
You're fond of me lobster. I think well, it's Kevin Smith talks about that quite a bit. He says like the lack of the mid-budget Hollywood film, like the mid-budget Hollywood film is done. Like yes. No one really, like they don't make them anymore. They don't really you don't see them anymore. It's just like that. I think he throws out the like $30 million mark. Like you either make movies for less than $30 million or you make movies for over $100 million. There's like nothing in between at this point. But like, I think there's certain places like A24 does pretty good with like, they're kind of low budget, but you could see like Green Knight was really, I feel like they did a really good job with that movie and they probably really got a bigger budget.
I really want to see that movie.
Oh, you haven't seen it yet?
No, I want to. Cause it was only in theaters for a bit, but I think you can rent it online now.
Yeah, you can totally add that. I saw it in the theater. It was, it's definitely not a horror movie. There are horror elements to it, but it is not.
It looked like a weird movie.
Yeah. That The Lamb is out right now. And I'm just like, I can't watch that one. That one is like too weird for me at this point.
I really want to see that movie, but I'm not going to go to the theater to see it. Like, I don't know.
I'm going to the theater tomorrow to watch Dune. So
Dune, for everyone I've talked to says Dune is amazing.
Yeah. I know a lot of people, well, it's available to watch for free, but I don't want to see that movie at home. I want to go to the theater. I want to get, you know, a big bucket of popcorn.
Dune is a movie that I would see in theaters. Yes. Lamb is not a film I would see in theaters. Like that's another interesting thing too, is like, I generally do not like, as someone who's a massive horror movie fan, like I fucking love horror movies. It's pretty much all I watch. Like, as you know, like, I don't like the standard theater experience for horror movies. I don't like going into the theater. I think horror movies are, there's two ideal ways to experience a horror film. One is at home by yourself, period. Like that's number one. And number two is at the drive-in, like legit, like double feature drive-in. Like, and the film needs to be, you know, like a Joe Bob movie. Like it has to be. Cause example, let's say the double feature is fucking Hereditary and fucking Midsommar. That would be the worst thing ever to like sit at the drive-in and watch together. Like, oh my God, like it'd be horrible. Like I'd never want to do that. Now you tell me the double feature is going to be like Reanimator and Army of Darkness. Fuck yeah, let's go.
Yeah, no, I would see both of those.
Yeah, and cause I think the biggest thing for me is like the thing that grew my horror, fascination, absolutely, other than, you know, watching movies that my dad bought because he compulsively bought every movie ever on Laserdisc, was for a period of time when I was doing my own thing, you know, going to the Hollywood Video and just hitting up the fucking VHS section and just looking at all the different, and I'm like, this looks like a banger horror movie, let's rent it. This looks like a banger horror movie, let's rent it. And then just like popping the tape in, fucking got the pop secret, sitting in front of the fucking CRT, ready to experience whatever trashy horror film I just rented.
And you cross your fingers and hope that there's nudity in it.
Yeah, usually, or you know, just me, or something at least. Really cool. Yeah, or something really cool. Yeah. Or that you can get some really weird shit with. Have you ever seen the movie Faust?
Yes, I did see Faust. I know exactly what scene you're talking about.
Thank you. Yeah, sometimes you get Faust.
Yeah, sometimes you do get Faust.
That movie was terrible.
Oh, it was awful. I did want to bring up one movie that I did watch recently that I think deserves a rewatch by our fan base, which is Arachnophobia.
I love Arachnophobia.
I didn't remember how good it actually was as a movie.
It's great.
It makes my biggest problem with Arachnophobia is that the opening sequence does too much to explain what's going on. And there's a lot of like pseudoscience in there that you don't need. Like the whole thing is that one of the things is that the spiders don't breed them, don't have any sexual organs themselves. They're part of a colony of spiders that live like ants, and they explain it like there's a queen spider. Now, here's the thing. As a kid, or even as an adult, most adults probably don't even know that most spiders don't have queens. So if you say it's the spider queen, most people are like, I understand. I get this point of the movie. Like, yes, of course, you're going to have, you know, arachnologists or whatever spider scientists are called who goes, that's not how it goes. But, you know, they're probably not going to be the ones who are the target audience for arachnophobia.
I think they're just I think they're just entomologists. I don't believe there's a subfield. I guess it would be an arachnologist if you like had like a specific subfield. Yeah. But I'm not sure if there's if that's actually a thing.
It's arachnology. It's arachnologist. I just looked it up. Yes. And the thing is in rewatch, I noticed that John Goodman's character, oddly enough, is doing a weird Bill Murray impression throughout the entire movie. It's really weird when you notice, you're like, why is John Goodman doing Bill Murray from Caddyshack? Like, what is going on here?
No.
Kind of. He's like, oh, yeah, well, you know, I'm going to stick around here. And I'm going to take care of some of the spiders. And, you know, we're going to use this type of gun. And you're just like, what the fuck is John Goodman doing?
It's Jeff Bridges as well, right?
And Jeff Daniels.
Jeff Daniels. I always get it. It's funny. I never get the two of them confused on sight, but their names always confused.
Yes. And it does also have in it Julian Sands, who most of our listeners might know from the movie Warlock, where he played Warlock. He plays the arachnologist. So I do throw that out there. Also, weirdly enough, directed by Frank Marshall. And if you don't know who Frank Marshall is, he's like a big time producer. He produced a lot of the like Indiana Jones shit, but it's like one of the weird movies that he just like directed. Like why the fuck did Frank Marshall direct this movie? He's literally only directed like three movies in his entire life. He's directed Arachnophobia, Alive, and Congo.
Alive. This movie, isn't Alive where it's the soccer team that eats each other in the mountain?
I think
that's great.
That's the movie with the soccer team. So he directed, actual movies that he's directed. He directed Arachnophobia, Alive, Congo, and Eight Below, which one's Eight Below? That's the one about, it's Paul Walker with a sled dog team. Something makes me feel like those are movies where like the director had to bow out for whatever reason or got fired. So he just took over directing because he was like, we got to get this out before this time. So he just, you know, put on the director's shoes and did it himself. I cannot think of anything great in Congo or Arachnophobia where you're like, oh man, the directing in this movie is so great. But it's a weird little side thing.
There's little spiders.
It is. I highly recommend everybody goes and rewatches Arachnophobia. Fantastic movie. And also one final thing. If you guys have Peacock, for Peacocktober, the WWE has put on the original Hell in a Cell match on Peacock.
Peacocktober? That's funny.
So you can watch The Undertaker throw Mankind off the cage into the announcer's table at Hell in a Cell.
Hell in a Cell.
Yes. The classic Hell in a Cell.
Nice. That's sick.
I don't know which Hell in a Cell. I think it is. It might be no, that can't be it.
It was the Hell in the Cell match. Doesn't matter what it was. I think it was WrestleMania 28, 18. Yeah. I don't remember. There's an eight is somehow floating around in my head for some reason, which might just be nonsense.
The classic Mankind versus Undertaker fight. Highly recommend it.
Mick Foley, that man.
He is one of the greatest wrestlers of all time. Maybe my favorite wrestler of all time.
Yes, he definitely spent more of his body than the average wrestler did. That's for sure.
And you know what? He's a really nice guy too. Well, most wrestlers are kind of nice guys with a few exceptions.
Wrestlers very rarely are dickheads. Not to say that there aren't, because there's plenty that are massive, massive chodes. But I would argue that I personally believe, and through my experience, it seems that there are more Mick Foley's than there are
Hulk Hogan's.
Yes. Yeah.
The Hulkamaniacs.
You say your prayers, take your vitamins.
Yeah. And it's like watching all those. It's like, you know, we should have been rooting for the Macho Man Randy Savage this entire time. So or perhaps Roddy Piper, Brutus the Barber Beefcake, any of those guys.
Yes. Yeah.
The Peacock has all the wrestling on it now. All the WWE shit is on Peacock. So you can literally go back. They have every fucking WrestleMania from the beginning on there. All the WCW shit. All that 90s NWO stuff with Razor Ramon and
Razor Ramon says.
Yeah. Exactly. So you could go back and watch all those. You know me, I'm not the biggest wrestling fan, but man, it's kind of cool that you could just go back and watch like crazy ass shit, you know, steel cage matches. They have all of those WWE home video specials that they would do. So like you could watch Super Tape 92, the best of Brutus the Barber Beefcake. WWE German fan favorites, the Hart Foundation. Oh, the Hart Foundation. That's sad. the best of the British Bulldog, Davey Boy Smith. All right. Any other gaming stuff that we should talk about before we're done?
Did we talk about gaming stuff? We talked about Underworlds. That's
Underworlds. That's about it.
Yeah. I mean, the gaming world is kind of just basically it's collectibles, man. Like people care about collectibles, not much else.
Yeah. I'm actually, I might not do Underworlds this season just because the price is super high, but I might, if I'm only collecting a couple games right now, so it's not too bad.
Again, for me, it's do you care about the price? If you think the price is outrageous, don't fucking buy it.
Yeah, exactly. All right, man. Well, go to the Game Classy Facebook page. It's the best way you can help out the best way you can get in contact with us. You can also like, comment, subscribe on YouTube's, like, comment, subscribe on the iTunes. That's the best way you can help out the podcast. You could get in contact with me. I am posting lots of 3D printed Titans on my Instagram page, Game Classy Joe. Steve is available on the Twitter at @command_throw.
Yes.
All right. Where he if you like Judy Hopps Battle Nun porn, that'd be the place to go to.
Yes. Judy, actually, you know what? I'm changing my handle to Judy Hopps's Butthole.
Yeah. So, you know, Steve wasn't posting it before this podcast, but guess what? He's gonna be posting afterwards. All right. So Steve, until next time.
I mean I recommend Judy Hopps's Butthole.com.
JudyHopsButthole.com.
Laters. All right, later.
Game Classy.